It's the rise of artificial intelligence and how this will influence giving and how charities fundraise.
And boy, could we do an entire episode season on AI.
That's so funny because I actually thought that myself when I was preparing for this conversation, for this episode, because I thought what I am seeing is there's more and more talk about it. I was in the sector. Different charities are doing things about it. So I really would feel that it would be remiss of us not to at least mention it in a trends episode that we're discussing. I think it's probably something that's moving at a rapid pace.
You're listening to Small But Mighty, the podcast of the Small Nonprofits Alliance, the online hub for Australia's small charities.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to our very first episode for season 6 of Small But Mighty. Our first episode for 2024, which is trends your nonprofit needs to be aware of this year. Big welcome to Bianca Crocker, our founder of the Small Nonprofits Alliance. Hi. Welcome to 2024.
Welcome to 2024 indeed. And season 6 is kind of scary as well. But hello to you and to all of our listeners.
My name's Kirsty and I'm co-founder at the Small Nonprofits Alliance, and you are listening to our first episode of 2024, where we're going to talk about some trends in the small charity space that we think you really need to be focusing on to create success in your organisation this year. And look, I am just going to confess that I don't think any of my trends are particularly new, but I definitely think they're going to be more important than ever this year, especially with the charity space being really more challenging than ever. We've got cost of living crisis, economic pressures, and then there's a lot of change around digital marketing and social media as usual. So all really important things to keep an eye on this year, I think, coming from me.
Mm-hmm. I've got something a little bit about relationships, which I think someone may say it's not a trend. It's something that you should be doing all the time, but I will talk a little bit about that. And I also will be mentioning that cost of living pressures and that tightening of donor belts across the country that a lot of charities are feeling, and how we can perhaps mitigate against some of that.
Excellent. Well, let's dive in. Bianca, what is your first trend?
That first trend is actually the option or the opportunity for small charities to think more collaboratively. So, as I mentioned, donors and families are tightening their belts. Cost of living pressures are being felt much more broadly across our communities. So fundraising dollar is really hard, much harder to come by for charities. And so to start to combat this, I really feel that a trend that is emerging, and I probably saw it a bit towards, you know, the middle half of last year, and there was bits of it coming through the pandemic, I must say, but I feel like it's something that people really need to be leaning into a little bit more in this year, and it's that thinking collaboratively. So I feel small charities have always or have more often than not been leaders in this sort of way. They often find ways to work together across regions and service areas, but I really, you know, encourage everyone to consider, or at least start to consider, how we might be able to do this from even a fundraising perspective. So it might look like a co-planned or co-branded event with another similar organization that you might have similar supporters, or it could be a similar geographically located organization. So if you're a local charity working in a local region, you might be able to, you know, do some collaborative work with somebody else. You could even do some collaborative raffles or lotteries with another organization. I know of a few charities that have done that, where they've gone into like a lottery pool sort of thing together. Or even some of that community engagement activity that you do. It's harder, it's getting harder and harder to reach people. So if you're, thinking about what community engagement you should be doing, perhaps that's some way that our small charities could start to consider about how they could do that more collaboratively. I think
this is a really interesting one, Bianca, because really, isn't it traditionally that charities, and in particular other small charities would see each other as competition and not necessarily partners.
Yeah, that's true. I think there's probably a deep-seated truth to that. But I think, you know, in all honesty, our main competitors, I think, in the charity space, whether you're a large or a small charity, is not another charity. It's the commercial world. So as people are, you know, cost of living pressures are increasing, do we want to be saying that we're competing against each other for the donor dollar, or are we wanting to say that we're competing against someone going to the movies or spending money at Coca-Cola or anything like that, which makes it really challenging? What we really want to be doing is actually expanding the donor pool and expanding the donations that we get collectively as a sector. You know, we already have literally billions of dollars donated to charities every year in Australia, but we can grow that over time. And we are actually seeing, you know, unfortunately, that number is shrinking, but the average donation is increasing. But it's not to say that that will always be how it is. But I think if we can try to think of our fellow organisations more as friends or ways we can work together. So obviously there'll be things that you can't always do together, but there will definitely be times that you can do things together. I think as a small charity leader, can you ask yourself what you can even learn from others, both in terms of your service delivery and in terms of your marketing and your fundraising? There was an article in Forbes magazine that spoke to 2024 being the year of learning and adaptation for the charity sector. So So thinking about that, what are others doing well? And can you reach out to them and work out ways to collaborate or share knowledge? Sometimes it could even be being something as creative as, I do know two organizations that are actually sharing a staff resource. So they are an administrative person who's working across both organizations in a, I think it's a 4-day-a-week role. I think it's 2 days in each organization. So that person, you know, it's harder to get, you know, we all know employment sector's getting harder to bring people into jobs and to fill roles. So being able to give someone that flexibility is really good. But for some people, for some organization, you might not be able to afford to have a full-time resource or even a 4-day resource. It's harder to get a 2-day resource because most people need more than 2 days worth of work. So there's a few ways of being flexible and collaborative like that. So I think, yeah, it's probably really a fruitful time to really start working with each other. So it's probably just a different perspective that we need around who our competitors are and what are they our competitors in, and how we can actually learn from our competitors, so to speak, or those working closely to us in the charity sector.
So perhaps looking at it from a different point of view, and isn't it what those two charities are doing with sharing an admin resource? How clever.
Yeah, really, really clever. And that's what I think. I think to get ahead, to get our best resources used, to get through these really challenging times that we're seeing at the moment, that it's really important to lean into that more collaborative thinking.
Well, I'm going to get quite specific with my first trend for 2024 that I think your small charity needs to be aware of, and it's something around email marketing, which anyone in the small charity space will be aware that small organisations heavily rely on email as a way to communicate and promote their campaigns, appeals, their events, particularly if resources thin, which we know they are in small organisations. Email is a really effective way to reach people, to maintain a relationship with your donor. So we all know that. Apple made some changes last year to the way it delivers emails, and Microsoft and others are following suit. And basically what it means is that the way they're delivering emails means that even in your MailChimp or your HubSpot or whatever email platform you might be using for your marketing, your open rates, the percentage of people on your list opening your email that you might have relied on heavily before to determine the success of your send, can't be relied upon as much anymore. It will look like the same amount of emails are being delivered in your stats. Your open percentage may look a little bit the same, but we just don't know how that data is going to be tracked with the way that Apple and others have changed the way they're delivering emails. It's basically just not as easy to track. So people need to change tact a little bit. And I will also put a little bit of a footnote in here saying, please, please tell me that when you are sending an email, you are checking how it goes after you send it. I know we are really time poor and busy and stressed out a lot of the time in a small organization, but really important to just be having a really quick look on how your emails do. That's a separate conversation. So when we're looking now, how do we determine if something's been successful? Well, the really obvious thing to do is to look at how has it gone. If you've been asking for donations or asking for signups for an event, then how many people respond on your website or wherever you're sending them to on your third-party provider platform? That's really the first indication of success. And then secondary to that, if you're sending a supporter newsletter or something else that may not have such a huge or obvious call to action, then your click rate. So how many people are clicking on the email, whether they're clicking through to your website or an article or whatever you've linked to, will probably be a bigger indicator of success. We've always used click rates to look at the success of an email, but we've typically combined it with open rates and other forms of analytics that would come along with, you know, in your MailChimp dashboard or wherever you're looking. So
is it just something? The click-throughs are less important. Sorry, the open rates now are less important. We should definitely be looking at the click-throughs.
Yes. And then conversely, what's happening on your website visits, what's happening on your signups or whatever call to action or whatever the main point of that email was, which means you will have to probably do a little bit more legwork. It's not as easy as just looking at the results from your send in whatever platform you're using and going, oh, great, 60% of people opened that email. Excellent. I did a great job. And really we shouldn't be looking at any analytics for any sort of digital marketing, whether it's social media or email on its own, or in a silo. We need to look at the big picture as well, but really important to know that, open rates now are not going to be as reliable. And we should be looking at multiple metrics to decide whether something has been successful and also just using some common sense and stepping back and not getting so lost in the data that, we don't use our common sense to be like, well, what was the point of this email? Well, if we wanted people to sign up for our fun run and we have no signups, then that hasn't been a success. And how can we rework it for the next send, or how else can we reach people?
That's great. I'm really glad that you spoke about that trend. And I think that one probably is something that most of our listeners either didn't know or didn't really know too much about. I know I didn't know that one particularly. So it's really great to share that piece of insights, because when we are, even if the charities are reviewing some of their EDMs and things like that and their sends, they might not have a lot of time to go into the depths of it. So they might just be looking at those first open rates. So it's good to know now that they should be looking for a few other indicators to check their success rate, which is good. My second trend is the one that I mentioned earlier. That is, perhaps many people would say this one's not a trend. It should be a standing item, but it is around strengthening donor relationships and the importance of this. So, you know, when I think we saw this probably through COVID and through the pandemic, where, you know, we felt like we didn't have a lot to talk about. So some charities stopped talking because they had to stop doing their work because of COVID, social restrictions or whatever it might be. But what we really need to be doing is, when donors are cutting back on their giving or that communication is lacking, you know, we need to consider how we actually strengthening those relationships. So when donors are needing to cut back on their giving, they're likely going to start to consider, probably in some more depth, which charities they feel most connected to. And which ones do they trust more than another one? And if yours is not up there in terms of the ones they feel most connected to, you will likely be one of the ones that they will either cut back or potentially even drop off altogether. So even through that challenging time, if a donor is not giving as regularly as they were, or they've even asked, you know, with regular giving, monthly giving programs, we often allow people to put a pause on it or downgrade, you know, maybe from a $20 a month to $10 a month. We want to still encourage that as well, because we want people to know that we understand where they're from coming from as well, and that we appreciate anything they can do. And if you do that in the really best way, in the right way, and then while they're not giving or while they've reduced their giving, you still connect with them and talk to them, that will really strengthen those relationships, which will pay dividends to come in years to come. So, you know, think about how can you tell better stories to demonstrate the impact of giving. Can you make a short 60 to 90 second video that you can email out to supporters a few times a year to show more tangible outcomes of the work that you're doing? Or can you enlist a couple of volunteers and, you know, make some donor calls to say thank you to them? And obviously you can make a script for them to use, but that can also be a really great way to connect to your supporter base. It's really, really important that we don't forget about this, or we don't neglect it, or even that we don't prioritize it, which probably all sounds a bit the same, but I think it's very, very important. And often when things get busy and if our donations are dropping, we might be getting a bit stressed. We might start lacking in this area. You really need to ensure that you're wedging your organization deeply into the hearts of your donors so that they feel connected to you. Even if they aren't giving currently, that they hear from you regularly and they feel like they are a valued part of your community. That will hopefully, as I said, pay for dividends in the future. So that's a reasonably brief one. And I know in this podcast many times before and in our masterclass webinars, we talk about donor relationships, but that one is, I think the trend on that is really important, and charities really need to get on top of that for this year.
So my next trend is quite a specific one. I'm all about the specific trends this year for 2024. I think that in itself is really telling, Bianca, because I just think the environment's tricky at the moment. You've just talked about a drop in, you know, donations and the pressure economically that we're seeing. We've also got all of these complexities within social media and digital marketing, AI, artificial intelligence, which I know we're going to touch on too. I think that's why mine are so specific, because they're very marketing focused. And I think we're really needing to be clever with what we do in the small charity space this year to be able to keep thriving in this environment. And I think that's the one thing that we always bang on about that small charities are really good at, and that's being nimble and being able to respond and pivot really quickly. So I want to talk about video, and I know everybody talks about video with their marketing hat on, but I just really want to hammer it home. Facebook really has seen a huge drop in engagement. Instagram has too, but I know it really can make it so frustrating when you're a small organization and you put all of your resources into creating content, which can be quite frustrating for social media, and then you get one like or you get no likes. I mean, you really feel like it's not cutting through. There's not a lot we can do about the algorithm, and we could spend a lot of time talking about how to trick it and how to get around it, but the reality is we have to live with it. And we don't exactly know what Facebook is doing with it and why they're doing it on a detailed level. So the best thing we can do is work with the beast, and the beast loves stories and reels at the moment. So you don't have to be on Instagram to be able to utilize this. If you've got a Facebook page and you're on your mobile phone, you'll be able to see that you can easily create stories. You don't have to create a complicated reel, but really, if you're not already utilizing daily videos or stories, then you really should be. It's a really easy way to boost your engagement on those social media platforms where it's falling. And I think that is going to be even more important this year. We're seeing Meta talk about a lot of changes across both platforms. We're seeing a real weakening of X, or formerly Twitter. We're seeing changes on LinkedIn as well. So going to be more important than ever this year to be really clever and nimble with the way we use social media. And we know that small charities don't have a lot of time to put into content creation. So you don't need to be posting every day, but anything you can do to boost the engagement of your followers is something that you should be focusing on. And as we've talked about in previous episodes, and we will touch on later in this season as well of Small But Mighty, is that your video doesn't need to be complex and sophisticated and expensively produced to be effective, particularly in the small charity space. People want to see the faces of the people that do the work. They want to see the people you help. They want to see the office you work in. And just a little tip, if you're really time poor as well and you have Instagram and Facebook, make sure they're linked. Pop all the story video on Instagram first and it will just flow on over to Facebook. You know, years ago, I would never have given that advice to do one type of content and put it across the two, but Meta have made it so that it's really a no-brainer to do that now, and it'll save you time and it'll really help you boost and make the most of engagement with your supporters on both platforms. So it has been talked about before. It's nothing new for 2024, like I flagged. But really, if you're not using video to boost your engagement on Facebook, you're mad. Mad.
I think that's a really helpful trend, Kirsty. And, yeah, I think it's a really important one as well. But really good. I think a lot of people will enjoy the fact of the change that has been there recently, like what you mentioned around doing a similar post or the same sort of post across a couple of social media accounts if you need to. I think that'll be really...
And look, it's not very often I encourage laziness, but we do it on our social accounts too, don't we? I mean, we just really post mostly everything.
Being working smarter, not harder,
right? That is what small charities are all about. So I would 100% encourage you to do that when it comes to creating video content and helping boost your engagement on social media.
I would love to make one special mention of one other trend, but I'm only saying, as I mentioned, that it's a special mention because it, as you mentioned a few moments ago, it's the rise of artificial intelligence and how this will influence giving and how charities fundraise.
Boy, could we do an entire episode season on AI.
That's so funny because I actually thought that myself when I was preparing for this conversation, for this episode, because I thought, you know, it's not probably an area that I'm really across, as in I can talk about donor relationships and other things like that at a governance level, but AI is probably not my area of expertise. But what I am seeing is there's more and more talk about it. I was in the sector, different charities are doing things about it. So I really would feel that it would be remiss of us not to at least mention it in a trends episode that we're discussing. And perhaps If you're a small charity that's listening to this episode and you've started integrating AI into your work, whether it's in your programs or your services or how you, you know, develop your comms or your fundraising, anything like that, we'd love to hear from you, because if you do reach out to us, it might be, as you just mentioned, Kirsty, something that we could build into an actual episode at some point to share with others, because I think it's probably something that's moving at a rapid pace, but it's something that I'm sure there are a lot of organisations out there, or at least a handful of organisations there that are those early adopters, as we call them, who are probably already starting to do some of that AI stuff. So I don't know if you had anything else to mention about AI in particular, Kirsty.
I think from a communications marketing point of view, very tempting to use AI for everything. You know, pop a little bit of ChatGPT in to write your emails and help with your content. And look, personally, that's not something I'm doing in my work, but I can certainly understand how it's attractive to charities and small charities where you're resource poor. But I would just urge people to, with everything we talk about, take a step back and look at the work that they are generating out of AI assistance and just make sure it still makes sense. Does it still speak to your audience? I'm all for time saving AI tools, but I think you still need to probably use them with a little bit of caution in terms of, is it still meeting our needs in terms of how we communicate with our donors. That would be my only thing. And I would just also, we sound like dinosaurs a little bit, don't we, here? But I think also important to just mention, the use of AI in image creation. I think at this point it's always good to, particularly if you're using images that might elicit emotional responses from donors or supporters, that you're letting them know if it's AI generated. I know we use stock images a lot of the time. We don't tend to do that. But when we talk about the generation of images using AI, sometimes they're not even real people, or they're composites, or not real situations or backgrounds. And I think just probably important with the rapid changes we're seeing in AI to be open and honest with your supporters about the content that you're using.
Yeah, I think that's a really great reminder. Great reminder, Kirsty.
Well, look, I think we have well and truly kicked off 2024. Hopefully we haven't frightened you into the dark corner of your office with some of those trends. I think it is a tricky time across the sector and in the world in general, but what we know is that small charities often rise during those times, as they did during COVID in a lot of cases too. So we wish you all the best for your 2024 and your small nonprofit. And we would love to hear your feedback on this episode or suggestions for topics for future episodes. We still have some room in this season to squeeze in some member features and some more myth-busting episodes. So we'd love to hear from you, members@smallnonprofits.com.au. I think that wraps up our episode, Bianca. So good to be back for 2024, and we will see you in the next episode.
Thanks, everyone, and great to be back on the podcast with you, Kirsty.